Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Morning Reload. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy snowy Monday. Saturday was January 6th. It came and went, and this morning, it's very difficult to find a single article even recounting the events of January 6th of 2021. Joe Biden allegedly kicked off his 2024 re-election campaign with a speech at Valley Forge. Here in the Cowboy State, the Campbell County Republican Party hosted Coy Griffin, a former Otero County, New Mexico County Commissioner, who was arrested for his involvement in the January 6th riot. He was the guy that was standing up on the west side of the Capitol Terrace with the blowhorn, praying with the crowd. Considering the gigantic crowd that was all around him, I can only imagine what he had to do to get up to the Capitol Terrace. When everything was all said and done, the only thing cameras captured him doing on January 6th was getting up to the Capitol Terrace, standing up there and praying with the crowd, and then leaving. There's no evidence that he entered the Capitol building, or that he hurt anybody in the crowd, or that he fought with any police officers, or anything like that. After the riot, he returned home to New Mexico and planned a return journey to Washington, D.C. for Joe Biden's inauguration. When he got to the inauguration in Washington, D.C., he was arrested. He was told that he had an outstanding warrant for his attendance at the Capitol rally. He was charged with trespassing and disorderly conduct. Eventually, the disorderly conduct charge was dismissed, and he was convicted of trespassing on restricted grounds of the United States Capitol building. In the aftermath of all of this, he was removed from his position as a county commissioner in Otero County, New Mexico. A judge ruled that he participated in an insurrection and removed him from his position under Clause 3 of the 14th Amendment, the very same thing that several states are trying to do to Donald Trump. Obviously, I'm leaving out a lot of the story, and I'm doing so intentionally, because I want to give you the opportunity that the mainstream media rarely does. I want you to make up your own mind about his story and what happened to him. I'm going to play for you his comments on January 6th at the Camplex in Gillette, complete in its entirety, unedited, and without any breaks. I'm going to give you a day to think about it, and then on Wednesday's program, I'll do a deep dive into Coy's comments, the articles that were published about what he said and about his actions during the January 6th riot, and we'll get as close as we can to the bottom of what Coy Griffin said and what happened to him. About an hour and a half after Coy Griffin was finished speaking, the Cowpie published an article about the day's events. It was littered with inaccuracies. And here's the funny thing about it. While Trotsky Wolfson was interviewing Coy Griffin, I was standing right there for most of it. And still, they went ahead and published the story. There was no way possible that they could think that I wouldn't fact-check every single word that was written in that article. If I had to venture a guess, I would say that the bulk of the piece that was published on January 6th in the evening had already been written before Coy Griffin ever started speaking. So in any case, you've got the plan. We'll listen to the thing in its entirety this morning, and then on Wednesday, we'll do a deep dive into it. So here is what Coy Griffin, former Otero County Commissioner in New Mexico, had to say this past Saturday in Gillette.
Amen. Well, thank you. As Patty mentioned, January 6th was a day that is much different than what the media has presented to us. As Patty mentioned, when she got back to her hotel room and turned on the news and was shocked by the images, I can honestly say that I was the same way. On the evening of January 6th, we traveled back to Roanoke, Virginia. I got to the room, I turned the TV on, and I couldn't believe the way the media was portraying that day. Because January 6th to me was one of the most remarkable days of my life. And God has allowed me to go through some pretty remarkable doors. From sitting at the desk with the President of the United States in the Oval Office, I've ridden horseback through the old city of Jerusalem on a final day of a trip that started in San Francisco and winded up in Jerusalem. So I've had God has really allowed me to experience some amazing days, but January 6th was a day like no other. It was a day where a type of patriotism was expressed that I've never seen before. And I was honored to be there. But personally, and who I am, to step you back just a little bit, before January 6th, I'm born and raised in New Mexico, the son of a sawmiller, raised in a sawdust pile in the log woods, making our living off of the land. Our family has a ranch back home too. So between the timber industry and the cattle industry, our forest allotment, we've had a lot of dealing with the federal government. And unfortunately, for most of my life, I've always felt like the federal government has been our enemy. For those that try to produce off of the land, for those that try to be independent and make our own way, it seems like the government is always there to try to hamstring us or cripple us anytime they can. So the home I was raised in was somewhat of a political home. My dad was a county commissioner for years. My mother, county assessor. So they were both really involved in county politics. So I was kind of raised in that environment where I knew the importance of local county officials and strong local county government. After that, I grew up rodeoing, went to college on a rodeo scholarship. Then after that, I got hired on with the Wild West Show in Paris, France, a remake of the Buffalo Bills Wild West Show. I drove stagecoaches, trick road, from an area of about 24 years old to almost 30, I believe. I spent kind of that area of my life and living in Paris. But during my final tenure in France, the Lord really began to move in my life. I was a professing Christian, you know, and I believe that I was saved whenever I was about 15 years old. You know, I went through the process. I believe I had the conviction and the understanding and knowledge of who Jesus was and my destitute state. So I made those steps when I was 15, but whenever I was about 30, the Lord really opened my eyes and took me to a place, as I look back, it was a place of almost kind of confusion of everything else going on in the world. And the only one truth that I rested firmly and solely upon that I knew was that Jesus Christ died on a cross for my sins. He was resurrected out of the grave, and I could have a new life with Him. And from that day forward, my life really changed. I rededicated my life back to Christ. I felt the Lord draw me back here to the United States. I went back to work with my dad, began to pray for a call in ministry, which led me to what I said, a horseback ministry, where I started in 2006 in San Francisco, California, with the call of God to saddle a horse and share the gospel. In 06, I left on Easter Sunday in San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge, and I arrived in New York City on September 11th of that same year. It was about 5.5 months out on the street, sharing the gospel, using my horse to do it. And I feel like I really was used by the Lord during that time. In 07, I once again started in San Francisco, rode to New York City, because the opportunity wasn't manifested yet to continue across Europe. But in 2008, I started once again in Galway, Ireland, and I rode across Ireland, England, France, Germany, Austria, Slovenia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, to the tip of Greece. I left the horse and rig in the tip of Greece. We flew to Israel, leased another horse in Israel, rode through the old city, and then came back to the States. The call that God had given me was complete. Came back to the States, went back to work, found a call to go pastor a church. A cowboy church called me to come pastor. So I heeded to that call. I pastored Cowboy Church in Alamogordo, New Mexico, for about 5.5 years. And during my time as a pastor, I pursued to be bivocational. I opened a barbecue restaurant. I knew nothing about the food business. Would not encourage anybody really to go down that road. But I kept it afloat. I built a food business up. I built it in about 3 different locations. And I was daily, I came to a point as I reflect back where Sunday morning I'd be in the pulpit preaching about the morality in our world and about just the desolate place that our country is from the pulpit. And then through the week I would deal with heavy taxes and all the regulations and stuff inside the food business. So it didn't take much nudging to push me into the world politics. With some of my friends kind of pushing me that way, I threw my name in there for run for county commissioner back home, and I won by it. I didn't even really have to politic much, and I say that humbly. But the people trusted me to elect me. And once I was in office, I began to watch President Trump. I began to watch his efforts on the border and to try and keep our border community safe, which I'm 75 miles away from El Paso, Texas, so I'm right there. And we're very affected by the border. So when I saw Trump making those efforts, I thought, you know, I want to get behind him. I want to support him. How can I do it? As I told you, I'd already rode across the states a few times. I thought, well, I'll put a group of guys together. We'll ride from Cumberland, Maryland into Washington, D.C. And we did it in February. We did it in February of 2019, whenever the president, if y'all remember back, had shut the government down, and he was going to shut it down again or go executive for the funding on the wall. He was in a really tight spot. He was really under a lot of pressure. And I thought that was the time to step out and support him. So I put together a group of guys. We rode about 170 miles from Cumberland, Maryland into Washington, D.C., down the Potomac River. Beautiful ride, very historic. But at the end of the ride, President Trump called me on the phone. I was in Newark, New Jersey, headed back. I had to get back to New Mexico because the very next day was our Second Amendment Sanctuary County resolutions. If y'all probably are familiar with that up here, our vote was the next day. I had to get back. President Trump called me on the phone. Amazing to talk to the president. He invited me to come back to the Oval Office to meet, to see everybody. And I can honestly say that I declined an invitation to the White House by the president. I told the president, I said, you know, I got to get back to my county. We'll come back another day. From that point, I began the process of campaigning for President Trump, supporting him. The Cowboys for Trump became more than just a name or called a group of guys into more of a type of place where we could advocate politic for the president, hold our horses all over the United States. Supporting President Trump, his policy, not necessarily supporting President Trump, but supporting his America First policy, putting our country first, securing the border, doing all the things that need to happen in our country that are not happening today. So as I was campaigning, I was supporting the president. We traveled all over, as I mentioned. January 6th, or the elections came up. I was as shocked as anybody whenever the results came in, because I was boots on the ground, living on the streets for a year before the election, and I saw the momentum behind President Trump. Everywhere you looked, there was a Trump flag or a Trump hat. I didn't see one Biden bumper sticker. I didn't see one Biden t-shirt. There was no momentum at all. But then the results came in, and it said that Joe Biden was the president, which I question. Sitting as a county commissioner, as y'all know, the elections are first certified on the local county level. Well, when 2020 came, when the results of the 2020 election were brought before us commissioners to canvass, I had questions. I reserved my vote, as well as the other two commissioners reserved their vote on certification. I held that ground. I held my ground on the no vote on the 2020 election to Washington, D.C. on January the 6th. whenever I traveled to Washington, D.C., I traveled up through the South with the Women for America tour, Amy Kramer, the bus tour. I spoke on the stage with the rest of the speakers on kind of a lead up to January 6th. January 6th, I had no intention at all on that day of walking down to the Capitol, as God is my witness. I was just going to go to the rally at the Ellipse. I didn't know what to expect. I was really hoping and praying there was going to be something that was going to be unveiled and some new information that was going to be shared. And I was really still just hanging on tight and standing strong to make sure that our elections weren't hijacked. And so, but on that morning of January 6th, as I stood down at the Ellipse, I got a text on my phone that morning from a good friend of mine, Gary Chapman. He was, y'all might remember Amy Grant, the gospel singer. That was Amy Grant's first husband, Gary. But Gary texted me that morning and encouraged me to go down to the Capitol and pray with people. And so, you know, being an evangelist and being a born-again Christian and knowing the power of prayer and knowing how the Spirit of God operates through other believers, when Gary sent me that text, I took it as it was just coming straight from the Lord, because I could feel it in my heart. And so on that day, we walked down to the Capitol. I never crossed in over any barriers. I never pushed through anywhere. I walked down in a big crowd of other patriots that looked just like y'all and Pat. You know, I could have been walking down there with Pat. While all of us walked down together, I stood outside of the Capitol. I could see stuff. I saw some different altercations from a distance. But the ground that I was always raised on is people are accountable for their own actions. And if somebody acts stupid over here on the side of the crowd, I don't feel like I'm responsible for a stranger's actions on the other side, you know? So I saw some people acting stupid, but in a crowd of a million, you typically do have a few stupid people, you know? So I stood outside the Capitol, as I said. I looked for opportunities to pray with people. And it was just like the Lord never really opened that door to pray until I stood on the west side of the Capitol on the terrace. And there was a man coming by with a bullhorn. And I asked him if I could borrow his bullhorn. He said, yeah, hand it to me. I have thousands of people down here below. And I led those people in a prayer for our country. I pray 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14 over our nation. You know, it's those that know your scriptures know that that's a scripture that pertains to repentance, that we need to repent as a people and cry out to God. So I prayed that prayer. I shared scripture. And then I left. I left on my own accord. I never was one time on that day told that I couldn't be where I was at. I never saw a sign that said stay out. I never saw anything of the sort. And I promise before you right now, I did not know that was a restricted area. But I left. But January 17th, I went back to Washington, D.C. Because I wanted to watch the inauguration. Because I've come to a point where I hardly don't believe anything anymore unless I see it with my own eyes. And so I wanted to go watch the inauguration and see it with my own eyes, because I still don't believe that Joe Biden is the president of the United States. I believe it's all just a scam. So I went back to watch the inauguration, and I was surrounded by FBI agents. And I was totally blindsided. Whenever the FBI arrested me on January the 17th and they were putting handcuffs on me, and I turned to one of those FBI agents and I said, what am I getting arrested for? He said, you have a warrant. And I promise you, whenever he told me that I had a warrant, I looked at him and I went, is this for an unpaid ticket out of New Jersey? Because that's like the only thing I could think about, because I got a ticket in New Jersey that was an affair, and I thought, well, maybe that's why. But no, it was because of my participation on January the 6th. They arrested me on January the 17th, and from that point, I I spent 3 weeks, the following 3 weeks, in what they call the DC Gulag, in solitary confinement. They threw me in a cell for the first 9 days. They restricted me to take a shower. I didn't shower for 9 days, the first 9 days I was in that hole. They didn't let me use a telephone. I wasn't able to call my family or an attorney or anybody for 9 days. And then after that, the 9 day stretch where I was stuck in the hole, then they let us out for 1 hour a day. But the abuse of the Washington, D.C. Gulag, for those of y'all, I hope that you've read up on what's going on. I hope that you're educated on how terrible that place because I'll tell you what, every story that you've probably read about that place is probably true. And it breaks my heart and terrifies me to say it. My cell in that place, the one wall, there was a real small little window that you could see out of. But the window would leak condensation at night. And it was just a block cell, a cinder block. So that condensation would build and it would run down the inside of that cell. And that whole wall was just black mold. It was solid black mold inside of that cell. The sink that I had in my cell would run brown water. That's what we had. That was the only water we had to drink, was what came out of the tap. And whenever they restricted me from showering, I could use that sink to wash my face and my hands for a little while until the sewer in that whole prison backed up and started coming up through the drains and stuff. And then I couldn't even use that. I hate to go into so many of the specifics and the details of it, but I just want you to know that the abuse and the torture of the United States government right now today against the American people is real. Tyranny is upon us. We have Marxists in office, leftists in office, that want to completely destroy our country because they have this vision of this utopia of drag queens and perversion that they want to take us to. I hate to say it, but the whole Democrat Party policy, build back better. If you're going to build something back, what do you have to do first? You have to destroy it. That's what the Democrats are doing to our country right now. The border that I spoke about earlier right now is, it's completely out of control, but it's due to the fact that 2020 was stolen from the American people. The reason why we're where we're at today is because the 2020 election was rigged. It was rigged. But yet the left will always say, well, there's no evidence of voter fraud. There's evidence of voter fraud. There's evidence recorded, documented, and ready to go in Otero County, where I sat as a county commissioner. Me and David Clement from the professor's record, some of y'all might know, me and David worked very, very hard doing a full audit. We canvassed the vote, we did the forensics, we have evidence of voter fraud in Otero County that hasn't been seen yet, but it's ready to be seen. It will be seen. I have faith and trust that one day we will know the truth about what happened in the 2020 election. But I know this is about January 6th, but January 6th is about the elections, and right now as we sit in uncharted waters right now. Our country has never been at the place that it is right now. And what tomorrow holds, I don't know. I don't know. I know that my God is bigger than anything else. I know that when people say America is too far gone, they don't know the God that I serve. The God that I serve is a God of restoration. The God that I serve is an all-powerful and an almighty God. And the God that I serve wants to bless this nation with the blessing that America has never seen. But what is it going to take? It's going to take local county government to step up and quit cowering to the state, quit cowering to the federal government, and honor their oaths to the people that they've sworn an oath to. For those of y'all that know how the certification process works, it's not Washington, D.C. that sell us out. It's our local county commissioners that are selling us out, because the vote is first certified on the local county level. If we will hold the line on the local county level with our county commissioners, and they will refuse to certify a vote that they don't, that they have a problem with, then we can begin to start to hold the line. But I believe right now, as I speak to county commissioners, and I try to engage county commissioners as much as I can, what needs to happen now, I believe, is right now county commissioners need to get concessions on public record. Right now, the next county commission meeting, county commissioners need to have agenda items that will say something as such: I will refuse to certify the 2024 election if Donald Trump is not on the ballot. Why not? Let the Secretary of State sit on that for a while. You know, give a warning. Don't wait until 2024 is upon us and the vote's before you, and then all of a sudden you're going, oh no, what am I going to do? Start work now. Get your concessions now. Let the Secretary of State in your state know right now, put them on notice that you're not going to certify the vote unless your concessions are met. If it's paper ballots, if it's voter ID, if it's everybody on the ballot, right now is a time, I believe, where county commissioners, county officials can take a stand. County sheriffs are the most important political position in your county. Without a doubt, hands down. The constructors of our Constitution were visionaries. They were brilliant men. And they knew that we were going to be in the position that we're in today. And so them knowing that, they left safeguards inside of our Constitution. And the greatest safeguard they left us is in the office of the county sheriff. Because the county sheriff is the highest jurisdictional officer in the county. He has the swing. Whenever a warrant is carried out inside of the county, if it's a federal or a state warrant, it has to go through the office of your county sheriff first. Whenever, you know, back home with our county sheriff, you know, he would very quickly say that he believed that the COVID mandates were unconstitutional laws. You know, it was easy to get him to say that. But whenever I would call him to the line to protect the people from those unconstitutional laws, the furthest he would go is to say, well, I'm not going to enforce them. Well, I'm not going to enforce the law. Well, that doesn't go far enough. I want you to keep them from being enforced. That's what our county sheriffs can do. The county sheriffs can keep the state and the federal enforcement agents out of his county if he believes they're enforcing unconstitutional laws, and he has to do nothing more than just stand on his oath to do it. I swear no. These laws are unconstitutional. I'm the highest jurisdictional officer. I can keep, the sheriffs can keep the unconstitutional laws from coming inside your county. But our grassroots have got to come on fire. Campbell County, I can't thank you guys enough, you know, for inviting me to come here, one of those tainted lepers from January 6th, you know, the unclean ones, you know. I want to thank you for having the courage, and I'm sure you'll have some media blowback. I'm sure there's the media will be going, oh, how dare those, they had an insurrectionist over there. But I want to thank you. You know, a good friend of mine back home in New Mexico, he said, you know, boy, he goes, why aren't you staying here in New Mexico? Why don't you stay here and stand up for these people in New Mexico? And I said, because there wasn't a single state party that invited me to come. Campbell County did. They invited me to come. They opened the doors for me to speak. And I thank you for it. I appreciate it. Give me a good excuse to come to Wyoming anyways. But my troubles was January 6th, as I mentioned, where I got thrown in jail. I think I left the story at that point. I spent 3 weeks in jail in solitary confinement. Then I came back to my county, Otero County, And of course, the cockroaches were coming out from everywhere, you know, with their recall. They waged a recall campaign against me, my political adversaries. And it was a vicious one. It had radio spots, newspaper articles. Every day they had their different signing stations set up around town, and they were all standing out with their signs on the side of the road, recall Coy. They worked their tails off. They went door to door on that recall. I mean, they poured lots of money in it, bless their hearts, and at the end of it, they only came up with 26% of the people in my county to sign their recall. The recall failed miserably. Why did the recall fail? Because the people there, they know me. They know what I stand for. I pastored a church in that town for 5 years, you know? I mean, they know I'm not a violent guy. I might kind of be a little bit strong by nature, but I'm not violent, you know? I'm not gonna, but I will stand. So since, but I made it through the recall, and since they couldn't remove me with the recall effort, they used something that you guys are probably getting more and more familiar about right now, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. You know, it's kind of hard for me sometimes whenever I look at the media and I see all these headlines saying nobody's been charged with insurrection. Well, there's, why are they going after Trump? There's been nobody charged with insurrection. Yes, there has been. It's me. I've been charged with insurrection. I had a civil lawsuit filed against me in New Mexico by plaintiffs that live outside of my county, and the grounds of the lawsuit was insurrection. I went before a state district court judge who was a Democrat on a bench trial. I had the likes of Irwin Shermansky, Dan Abrams, Lawrence Tribe, the NAACP, they all entered in against me on this legal lawsuit, trying to set the groundwork for what's going on right now against Trump. But at the end of this, at the end of my trial, the judge found me guilty of insurrection, found me to have violated my oath, and removed me from my commission seat. I'm the first elected official in 150 years that's been removed using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment since Reconstruction. But it's a fight, but believe me, it ain't over with that. You know, it's not like I laid down and just went home and said, okay, well, I'm beat. No, I called it fraud. I've been vocal in my position, and I appealed. I appealed to the New Mexico Supreme Court, and the New Mexico Supreme Court is very far out there in that field. And they didn't render me an opinion back. They just said, we stand by the district court's decision. So since they didn't render an opinion back to me, that created an avenue for me to go to the United States Supreme Court with an action. So I went down to Mar-a-Lago. I have a great counsel, Peter Tichten, who signed me up pro bono, a longtime friend of President Trump's. And Peter Tichten filed a petition in the United States Supreme Court on the constitutionality of removing me using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. We filed it at the beginning of the summer. It's kind of interesting how the Supreme Court picked over it. They didn't pick it up. And so in the fall, we filed a motion to demand a response from the United States Supreme Court on our filing. And it's interesting that the day we filed that motion to demand a response, the Supreme Court fired back to the New Mexico Supreme Court and told them to do their job and give the response. So right now we wait on New Mexico to respond, New Mexico Supreme Court to respond, I believe by mid-January sometime. So that could be a great legal win for justice. To get that removal overturned. So I have that legal action, and I have one more very important legal action that I want to share with you that pertains directly to January 6th. I appealed my trespass conviction as they found me guilty of misdemeanor trespass. And I appealed that trespass conviction on the grounds that the restricted area that they call a restricted area was not authorized in the correct way. They didn't follow their own U.S. code. And any of you out there that ever has to go up against the government, I want to share with you the best political advice that has ever been given to me. If you ever go up against the government, the best laws to you, the best way to beat them is to use their own laws against them. To make the government follow their law, because the government never wants to follow the rules. The government just wants you to follow the rules. But in regards to the restricted area, the government did not follow U.S. code as far as signage, as far as the correct barriers. And so if I can get the restricted zone charge overturned on appeal, then it's gonna do great things for those of us that were there in Washington on January 6th, because there's a lot of great Americans that can't sleep at night, living in fear that the FBI is gonna roll into their driveway at night and knock all their doors down and drag them out. You know, the FBI is unfortunately a very disgraced agency right now. And the FBI was very involved in January 6th. The FBI had federal informants dressed up as Trump supporters inside the Capitol before the doors were breached. Make sense of that. The FBI had instigators and agitators scattered all throughout. So January 6th, they already had January 6th as an insurrection before January 6th ever happened. It was their narrative that they built to. They wanted to call it that. They want to sensationalize it. They want to blow it up in the media, and the media stick it down our throats. But I myself, as well as so many others like me, are glad that we went to Washington, D.C. on January 6th. I'm glad that I can leave that legacy for my son and my family. That I traveled there. I stood for integrity. I didn't go on my own. I didn't go because of me. I didn't go because I went for my country. I went for the future of our country. I went in a sacrificial way. And sacrifice is going to be what's going to get us through this. As today is the Campbell County fundraiser. You know, and it's, y'all are very generous with the pies and the cakes and pouring into your local GOP. But I want to just tell you this, you can't give enough. You can't give enough right now. Right now, as I said, we're in uncharted waters, you know. And right now is not a time to be comfortable. And I thought a lot about what I was going to share with y'all coming up here and you know, really just praying over everything. I just, you know, I thought right now we're in a comfortable place, somewhat. You probably are. I'm talking about maybe like financially. I mean, whenever you sit there and you think about how you can help the Campbell County GOP, you're probably thinking, well, what do I have in my account? What can I really afford? And how can I stay comfortable and only give this month? Right now's the time to get uncomfortable. Now's the time to give like you've never given before. Now's the time to support like you've never supported before. Because if we don't do it now, we might not have tomorrow. Tomorrow's not promised to us. You know, you might have a bunch of money in your bank account right now, and guess what? If you don't have a country or a place to spend that, it's not going to be worth anything anyways. Right now is the time to get behind candidates, to get behind people you believe in, and to get behind a Campbell County GOP who's not scared to have somebody like Coy Griffin stand in front of them today and speak to them about the things that I think you're very, very, very concerned. And I want to speak to the Christians, you know, the people that live by faith, you know, I mean, we know that God's going to take care of us. You know, we know that God's going to provide. So why not just give like you know that God's going to provide? Give, support the Campbell County GOP. Support Scott Klim. Support Patty. Support those that are engaged in the party, because we need the Republican Party, but we need a true party. We need a party of patriots. We don't need a party of infiltrators, and we don't need a party of rhinos, because the Republican Party today has been infiltrated by rhinos. And if there's anybody here today that has been called a rhino, I just want you to instead of automatically getting defensive and saying, how dare they, and who are they, and why do they say that, instead of having that heart, I'd rather you just kind of reflect. and wonder why. If somebody has called you a rhino, there's probably a reason for it. Probably might be some policy that you're supporting, might be because you're lukewarm on some things, might be because they can't trust you, you know? But if you've been called, and I don't know anybody here from Adam, I don't know if anybody here has been called a rhino, but if you have, I'm talking to you, reflect. Just reflect. Don't get defensive. Don't want to fight. Just reflect and consider it. Because there's a reason you were called a rhino, probably, you know? I mean, and not to beat you up, but just to get you to try to think about it. Because we need a party right now that's strong, that's together, that pushes together. And what does the Bible say? If you're not with me, you're against me. We, you know, if you're not in, if you're not together, then you can be causing more harm than you are good. If you're not charging forward with the greater good in mind, which is freedom, which is liberty, which is the sacrifice of so many veterans that have died for our freedom. They died, they gave their lives, at many at very young ages. They didn't get to live a life. They didn't get to live a long life. You know, they didn't get to experience life. They gave theirs so you could. They gave their lives so you could enjoy life. So you could enjoy a free country. So you could have hope and a future and prosper. Consider that. Think about that. Freedom isn't free. Been many sacrifices that have been paid for it. But as we go forward together, we must go forward with the Spirit of God. And that is what I believe, that's what I love about the Republican Party, is because you find more of that Spirit. We should be standing on a godly platform. We should be gathered and united around the commandments of God and on the same moral platform. But again, as I address the whole rhino situation, I think a lot of times that's kind of what rhinos are. Rhinos are the ones that don't like to pay taxes, but they still like to hang on to their ideas of what they think is right and wrong. You know, because I've met a lot of homosexual Republicans. And whenever I talk to them, most of them are like, yeah, you know, I believe in gay marriage. I believe, you know, of course, in homosexuality and gay marriage and all that. But yet they're a Republican because they don't like to pay taxes. And the Democrats want to tax you to death. So fiscally they're conservative, but socially they're Democrats. And that's what begins to drive a wedge in our party whenever you have to have conversations like on such things as the morality of homosexuality. That shouldn't be. There shouldn't be a conversation that we have to say half about that. There should be givens in our society now. Marriage is between a man and a woman. It's not between whatever you want to do that. We shouldn't have to have a conversation about that, you know? But we've gotten to the place where we have to have a conversation about how many genders there are. Are you crazy? I mean, it's just, it's the crazy place that we've been driven, and the scary thing is I think it's been strategic to drive us there. It's like what Obama says. You flood the town square with enough sewage, raw sewage, and the people don't even know, begin to not even know what's right and wrong. And that's what's going on in our country. We need revival. We need that revival to start in the hearts of each one of you individually, to just stop and pause and reflect, and then in your homes, and then in your communities, and then in your state, and then we get the country back. But it starts grassroots in your home, in your local Campbell County GOP. Give to them, support them, be active, Get involved. Get engaged. Fight like there might not be a tomorrow, because there may not be a tomorrow if you keep sitting on your butt. We have to get active. We have to get involved. We have to sacrifice like we've never sacrificed before. And we can't back down. We gotta win. And in my opinion, if it doesn't offend anybody here, I believe the only one to get behind is President Donald J. Trump. He's the one. He's the horse in the race. A lot of people say, well, I don't like his mean tweets, and I don't like the way he talks, and I don't like this, and I don't like that. Well, you know, sometimes you need somebody to rattle a cage every once in a while. And we're in the cage rattling stage right here. We're not in a polished political president that says everything in such a presidential manner. Who cares about all that? I want to get our country back. I want to secure our border. I want to secure our children's future. And President Trump is the only candidate in the race right now that will fight and get us through, I believe. I know that if anybody has any questions, I know we've got some microphones set up. If anybody has, I think that was. And if you don't have any,
yeah. Is it on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now it's.
Okay. Yeah. How are you? How's it going?
You mentioned when you were down in New Mexico, there was plenty of evidence about the fraud in your election. Did that involve your tabulators? Is it a combination of a number of things? Could you discuss that? Because
sure.
I think we've got a little of that going on.
Absolutely.
In our state.
Absolutely. The canvassers, unfortunately with the tabulators, boy, that's a hard nut to crack. And I tried, you know, I made a concession whenever they were begging for my vote to certify the election. I made a concession. I said, all I ask is just to have an outside forensics expert come in, examine the machine, make sure there's no technology to consent or receive information. If you'll let me do that, then I'll certify. Absolutely not. Which only leads to more suspicion. As I sit as a county commissioner, and the state sends me an electronic tabulator to count the votes in which I'm supposed to be watching over. And somebody says, hey, that tabulator's not working right. And I say, okay, well, let me get somebody in here to look at it. And the person that sent it to me says, oh, no, you can't look at it. Well, what sign does that say? I mean, if Dominion was a legitimate company and was striving for success, you would think they would say, absolutely. Look at it, you know. I mean, make sure it's working right. But they didn't do that. On the campus, when we went door knocking, we found one residence back home that had, I think it was 24, I'll just say 24, I think it might have been 27, 24, votes that were cast out of it, and not one of the people that cast votes from that residence lived at that residence. They were all ghost voters. So, we have that. We have all of that evidence in a report that's found and ready to go right now. So, I mean, it's hard to do though. You know, I mean, we audited Otero County, which is a very conservative county, and man, it was hard to get it going. I mean, we had a congressional oversight committee that was formed with its direct focus on Otero County. And the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, they really fought us hard. What harm does an audit do? Why would they be threatened by an audit? Unless they were stealing the vote.
Yeah.
To follow up on that same
yes,
question,
ma'am.
Do you think it was the Secretaries of State and Attorneys General that were being paid from an outside source is why they were bowing their neck?
You know, I stopped short of maybe accusing them from really having a coordinated effort inside. I just think that, you know, we live in a world with computer hackers nowadays, you know, and people that can get into these. If you have a machine that's storing information on it digitally, then with hackers, they can, I mean, yeah.
Okay, but my actual question is, have you done these sort of talks in communities that weren't so well received, where you weren't so well received? So what kind of questions were you asked?
Yeah, I've done a lot of talks in places where I wasn't very well received, I guess. But no, I mean, as far as the question around the machines go, and just the electorate in general, you know, I think we found enough evidence back home in Ontario County to prove our point that it was tainted, it was fraudulent. You know, I don't know if I answered your question. I'm sorry if I didn't.
Well, I just mean, like, have you given talks other places besides Republican states or counties like ours?
Well, not really. Not really. And that's why I commend the Campbell County GOP, because as I mentioned, when you've been involved in with January 6th and kind of been on the front where I've been, it's, you know, it's just people have a lot of reservations because, you know, we live in a world where, you know, we have to be very, very gentle. And we don't need to be, I don't feel like this is the time to be gentle. We need to be bold. They're trying to censor us everywhere they can, deplatform us, shut us up. And the more they push on us, the more we need to stand.
Maybe this is more of a testimonial. On January 6th, our daughter was in D.C.
Okay.
And I was on the phone with her all during the day as she told me how wonderful and exciting it was. And I just want to tell everybody, it's just like you said,
sure.
It's just like Patty said. It was a wonderful day that was shattered.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much for talking to
us. Thank you, Mary. I appreciate that.
Representatives have done nothing to help the J6 people that are still in jail and haven't had a court date or any kind of.
I know, and it's really, really, you know, I mean, the biggest disgrace in our country today, unfortunately, is in the Republican Congress. They're just not acting with the power that they have, you know? If right now the Republican Congress could, they could release the video footage, you know? They could. I believe that they could. I guess maybe I pick on them so hard because I don't ever feel like there can be enough that can be done because I know how bad it is. You know, there's, and I don't feel like they're. I don't feel like they're doing us justice right now. I think.
Is there anything you would suggest that the person do to get some movement from them?
Pray. You know, I mean, it's a spiritual battle right now, you know. We get so caught up in the political, but we know the political is only the manifestation of the spiritual. Politics is just where your heart's at, you know. Your heart's driven by who you serve. And that's why we really need revival. But we just need Christians and we need praying people just to dig in and keep pleading God. Thank you.
Been astounded by our senators that we have in this state. Not one of them has come out, and I mean, we still got Barrasso that's calling it an insurrection. And it amazes me that none of these elected officials are trying to do anything about the guys that are locked up.
And you need to keep reminding them of that. The people, the elected officials that do have a platform to speak, they need to be using their voice to advocate, to bring attention to those. There's some of those guys that have been locked up for over 3 years and haven't even had a trial.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and your state legislators should be pointing to that.
Yeah.
they might not have to be going and advocating for an individual January 6th guy, but they could at the very least point out to the fact of the injustice of people not even being able to have a trial. There's no excuse for them being silent.
Just wanted to ask you, you said you were in jail for 3 weeks.
That's correct.
Is your whole situation resolved?
It is. It is. I went to trial. They offered me some plea deals. I denied. I went to trial. And at my sentencing, they sentenced me to 2 weeks in jail, which I already spent 3 weeks in pretrial. And then 60 hours of community service, year probation, I think. But yes.
What was the actual charge? Trespass?
Misdemeanor trespass. knowingly entering into a restricted zone, but yet, when I had my trial, the government didn't produce one shred of evidence that I knew that was a restricted zone, and the reason why was because I didn't know that was a restricted zone. So that's all pointed out to my appeal as well. So.
How do you think that you got to trial so quick when so many people haven't?
You know, I was one of the first ones, I think, that was sentenced, or that was charged, and, you know, I don't know, I mean, I think a lot of the, like, one friend of mine, Jake Lane, who's been in there for over 3 years, I think the reason why he hasn't been to trial yet is because he won't accept their plea offers and stuff, you know, he's saying, no, I'm going to keep fighting, so the more you fight, the more they make it suffer.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
One question, Coy. I mean, we talked and I forgot what you told me about what website it is that supports the J6 prisoners you can go to and you can find out how to write to them.
Yes.
Let alone support them.
Yes.
Write to them.
Yes, the Patriot Mail Project is it's a platform where you can write letters. American Patriot Relief, they're another organization that's doing a lot of great works for the J6 families. But I tell you what, you know, there's been a lot of people that have had their lives totally destroyed, you know? I mean, and I've shared a lot of my hardships with you, but God forbid, I always tell people, God forbid, don't feel sorry for me. Not when there's still people in there. You know, it's an abuse like we've never seen. Yep.
I'm hurrying.
I just think where in the paper that they're wanting to move our absentee ballots and our postal service to Denver, and I just feel that's kind of an early ploy to take the absentee ballots that are mailed in, do a little snatched with them, maybe. So I just thought I'd bring that up.
And you know, and that's something right there could be a concession that could be made through our county, or through Campbell County, where Campbell County could just say, look, we're not going to let you do this. Because they're going to be trying, any opportunity they can to cheat, bet your boots they will.
I'm sure that you're aware of the hostility the J6 people have received from the newspapers and the press. Except there's one person, Julie Kelly.
Yes.
Are you aware of her?
I know Julie. Yes, sir. Yeah. Julie's doing a lot. Julie's doing a lot of great work for the J6 community, and it's very much appreciated. You know, I mean, right now, you know. It's just now kind of, the momentum is just now kind of starting to come back where there's more people in the media that are covering what really took place on January 6th, and that's very welcome. And Julie Kelly's doing a good job now.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Jeff Murray in Clark County. Is there anybody that can force the Department of Justice
to follow their own law along the United States. Are they the top dogs? Nobody can force them to do anything.
You know, it seems like that's the way they're operating right now. And it's just such a shame because the DOJ has such a strong focus on people like me and others like me with the domestic terrorist watch list and agents assigned to us and all the resources that are being used for us whenever we have a world that's full of sex traffickers and human traffickers and violent criminals, and our streets are getting more and more dangerous because they're because of the focus of January 6th and the police resources. But yeah, I don't know, the DOJ needs to be lined up.
Your talk inspired lots of questions. My name is Ted Davis. I'm from Kirk County, over in Sundance. One of the questions that I would have is, as a convicted insurrectionist, what weapons did you bring?
I didn't even have a pocket knife.
Yeah, I read some of the articles and it was like skateboards. Like the most dangerous one was some guy had a hatchet in a backpack somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, they were really going to overthrow the government? That was an organized plot to overthrow the government with zero weapons. Yeah. And they're using crutches and skateboards, and that's going to overthrow the U.S. government. So,
and the whole concept of the skateboards are probably carried around by Antifa, too.
Yeah, so the whole concept seems extremely far-fetched. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, sir. No, it was an orchestrated plan from the beginning. Yeah, I mean, they wanted it to be an insurrection. It's just very sad that they were able to destroy so many lives by doing it.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much for coming to Lead Harbor. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
I can appreciate getting your face kicked in by the government, going against a government that can spend $18, $20, $30 million to fight you unless you get a lawyer that'll stand up for you.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is what are your political aspirations after this? Are you just going to go and speak? Are you going to do more?
And I've been asked that question quite a bit, and I believe I've gained enough President Trump's respect where I'm really praying that he gets elected and I can go serve on the federal level. I'd like to maybe go somewhere, inside the Department of Ag, maybe inside the interior somewhere, but I'd like to be on his administration and try to be a voice for the ranchers and loggers and sawmillers and people who are getting on the long run because we're under attack. The Western way of life, rural America, all these efforts to cripple our cattle industry and our logging and our ranching, and those were all the industries that at one time, the taxes off the stumpage and grazing and everything would fund our local schools. And our localities were funded off of the local industry. But the governments come in and kill the logging, they kill the ranching, they kill all the local avenues to fund our school. So when they do that, then instead of the schools operating off of the local money, now they come in with the federal money and replace that our local with the federal money, and then they tell us you do what we say or else. Where before, when we're more self-sufficient, then we can say no, buzz off. But whenever you're dependent on the federal money, we just really have to get our local industries more into that.
Well, we're gonna bring coal back in a moment, that's for sure. So thank you.
Those at work, those industries at work.
So there you have it, exactly what Coy Griffin said in Gillette this past Saturday. As I told you at the beginning of the program, I wanted you to hear every word of what was said on that stage, and then on Wednesday, we're going to do a deep dive into the article that was published after what Coy Griffin said and some of his comments in the past. Like I always tell you, there's three sides to every story. There's your story, my story, and then there's the truth. That's what we're shooting for on Wednesday's program. Have a good week, and we'll talk again on Wednesday. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboys State Politics Studio, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboys State Politics.